From tanks to jets. It's the same conversation about different equipment.
France doesn't exclude sending fighter jets to Ukraine, but he laid out multiple conditions before such a significant step could be taken. The conditions, he said, include not leading to an escalation of tension.
Plus, a new report by Human Rights Watch accuses Ukraine of using a banned anti-personnel mine.
The other kinds of war crimes that Russia has been committing, from torture to many other things, doesn't excuse use of these banned weapons by Ukraine.
And later in the program, we hear from the former Prime Minister of Bulgaria and how he got supplies and ammunition to Kyiv. Today is Tuesday, January 31st. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Ukraine's defense minister is expected in Paris on Tuesday to meet President Emmanuel Macron amid a debate among Kyiv's allies over whether to provide fighter jets for its war against Russia. This after U.S. President Joe Biden ruled out giving F-16s. Reuters' Flora Bradley Watson reports. No.
The U.S. will not provide F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine, President Joe Biden said on Monday. His comments come after the U.S. and Germany announced plans last week to provide Ukraine with heavy tanks, ending weeks of diplomatic deadlock on the issue. Ukraine's defense minister said he will now push for Western fourth-generation fighter planes, the F-16 included. France and Poland have signaled they are willing to entertain such a request, but when asked about the issue, Biden was categorical.
Will the United States provide F-16s to Ukraine?
No.
Biden's remarks could put him at odds with other Western allies. Just hours earlier, French President Emmanuel Macron told reporters in The Hague that, quote, by definition, nothing is excluded when it comes to military assistance. Poland's prime minister also did not rule out a possible supply of F-16s, though he said any such transfer would take place in complete coordination with NATO countries. All this comes as Biden is reportedly planning a trip to Europe to coincide with the first anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Biden confirmed on Monday that he would visit Poland, quote, soon. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is urging the West to hasten delivery of its promised weapons so his forces can go on the offensive. He accuses Russia of relentlessly attacking the East as revenge for Ukraine's resistance. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has warned any additional supplies of Western weaponry to Ukraine could escalate the conflict.
That's Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. The possibility of providing Kyiv with fighter jets to help beat back Russia's invasion forces risks the unity of Ukraine's Western allies amid fears of escalating the nearly year-long conflict. From the Associated Press, Charles de Ledesma reports.
Kyiv officials have repeatedly urged allies to send jets, saying they're essential to challenge Russia's air superiority and to ensure the success of future counter-offensives that could be spearheaded by tanks recently promised by Western countries. On Monday, French President Emmanuel Macron said France doesn't exclude sending fighter jets to Ukraine, but he laid out multiple conditions before such a significant step could be taken. The conditions, he said, include not leading to an escalation of tensions or using the aircraft to touch Russian soil. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A new report from Human Rights Watch is critical of the Ukrainian armed forces. We'll have that story in a few minutes. Now, though it's not jets, France and Australia have agreed to join forces to produce something else for Ukraine, thousands of artillery shells, to help push Russian forces out of the country. Australian Defense Minister Richard Marles and Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong are in Europe for talks with key allies. Phil Mercer has the details from Sydney.
French and Australian officials say several thousand 155mm artillery shells will be manufactured jointly by French arms supplier Nexta, while Australia will supply the gunpowder. The first supplies are expected to be delivered to Ukraine by the end of April. The announcement was made Monday at a joint news conference in Paris by French Defence Minister Sébastien Lecornu and his Australian counterpart Richard Marles. Australia is the largest non-NATO contributor to Ukraine's war efforts. It supplied missiles and Bushmaster armoured personnel carriers. A group of up to 70 Australian Defence Force personnel has also been stationed in Britain to help train Ukrainian troops. Australia also has sweeping sanctions on Russia, the most severe Canberra has ever imposed on a foreign government. Miles told reporters Paris and Canberra are standing in solidarity with Ukraine.
We wanted to act together as a statement about how importantly Australia and France regard the support of Ukraine in the current conflict. Both of us have supported Ukraine separately in other ways, but we wanted to make it really clear that Australia and France do stand together in support of Ukraine in the face of this Russian aggression.
Also attending the media briefing in Paris were French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna and Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong. While support for Ukraine's effort to repel the Russian invasion have dominated bilateral talks, Paris and Canberra have also sought to ease diplomatic tensions. Ties between the countries took a serious hit in 2021 when Canberra abandoned a French submarine contract in favour of American nuclear submarines, as well as joining the Trilateral Security Alliance with the United States and Britain, known as AUKUS. Miles and Wong are also due to hold talks this week with British government ministers. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Former Bulgarian Prime Minister Kirill Petkov will be on the program soon. Now, human rights researchers say they've documented numerous cases in which Ukrainian forces have fired banned anti-personnel mines at Russian military positions in the fierce battle for the western city of Izium last year. A report released Tuesday by Human Rights Watch includes multiple detailed accounts by researchers, raises questions about Kyiv's credibility and intention as the Russian invasion nears the one-year mark. I spoke with Steve Goose. He's executive director of the Arms Division at Human Rights Watch and co-founder of the International Campaign to Ban Landmines, winner of the 1997 Nobel Peace Prize.
There's very solid evidence, widespread evidence, that Ukrainian forces have been using anti-personnel mines in and around the city of Izium in any case. We have people on the ground for 3 weeks who went there to look at Russian instances of torture, but instead people kept saying, we're having trouble with anti-personnel mines. So we turned it into a mission on anti-personnel mines and discovered that thousands of rocket-launched anti-personnel mines of the PFM type were used, and we're convinced they were used by the Ukrainians because of any number of factors, perhaps most importantly that the Russians were occupying the area at the time, and so they were the likely target.
And you describe physical evidence. Can you tell us what you saw?
Well, the mines are everywhere. There's no question that that the PFM mines have been used extensively. That's why all of the local people were complaining about it, because they're extraordinarily dangerous. A lot of times they don't explode when they're supposed to, and they sit on top of the ground, and people pick them up, step on them, and they're extremely dangerous. So we had eyewitnesses to the attacks. We had deminers. We had doctors looking at people who had stepped on the mines and had to have amputations. It was very compelling that this was widespread use by Ukraine of these mines.
You do mention several different things that Russians have done that also would violate these anti-war treaties, different atrocities the Russians have committed. I know there's an argument out there somewhere that said, well, it's okay that Ukrainians did that because the Russians did this. How would you respond?
Yeah, well, there's no question that Russia has used anti-personnel mines extensively in many, many different areas of Ukraine. Russian use has been much more widespread than Ukrainian use. But the widespread use of anti-personnel mines by Russia and the other kinds of war crimes that Russia has been committing, from torture to many other things, doesn't excuse use of these banned weapons by Ukraine. Ukraine is a party to the 1997 Mine Ban Treaty that comprehensively prohibits any use of anti-personnel mines at any point in time, whether you're at war or not. And so if they've been using these mines in the way that we've described them, it's clear they're in violation of this convention.
Dmytro Lubinets is an ombudsman for the Ukrainian government. And just this morning, I guess this evening, Ukraine time, he released a statement regarding your report. And what he said is that the Russian military has been trying to discredit the Ukrainian military this whole time, that the Russians are looking for a way to make Ukraine look bad while Ukraine is trying to get more military aid and more financial aid from the West. Can you be sure these mines were laid, these rockets were fired by Ukrainian forces?
Well, they have been trying to discredit the Ukrainian military in any number of ways that they possibly can, in a very hypocritical way. But in this instance, the factors add up to just too much. The fact that the Russians were occupying the area leads one to believe that they had to be the target. We don't think that you would have a case of Russia over many, many months launching many, many attacks against their own soldiers. It's too widespread. It's, you know, it's not one or two mines here and there. It's thousands of mines clearly have been launched. We found pieces of launchers. We found pieces of the mines themselves, canisters they came in. This is not something that you can stage.
So given that this cannot be undone, the mines can't come back, what's the next step?
Well, what we want is for Ukraine to recommit itself to the mine ban treaty, to stop using anti-personnel mines immediately, to undertake an investigation into how this happened, find somebody who's accountable for it, not just the people who might have launched these rockets, but the people who ordered the launching of the rockets. And then we think that there's a need for Ukraine to make a commitment to clearing these mines, the deminers getting at it right away, and then in the longer term to provide assistance to the victims of these weapons and their families.
Steve Goose, Executive Director of the Arms Division for Human Rights Watch. Sir, thanks for taking the time to be with us this morning.
Thank you.
Ukrainians experience three rounds of air raid sirens, but no attacks. We find out what it might mean. And we get Kyiv's reaction to the Human Rights Watch report about the Ukrainian armed forces' use of banned landmines. We're joined now by Anna Chernikova, our reporter in Kyiv.
Ukraine had three massive air raid alert across the country, and reports say that there are aircraft in the air, battle aircraft in the air on the territory of Belarus and on the territory of Russia. Usually what it means that Russian forces are checking out and trying Ukrainian air defense. So basically, they're just checking where air defense is located, and then this is kind of preparation for a massive attack. And this is something that Ukrainians kind of, you know, expect. So, of course, it's not a guarantee that the attack would happen, but this alarms give a hint that it might be the same case scenario as was last week. And also, it's important to understand that, you know, three air raid alarms, they last for almost an hour each. And of course, it creates a lot of difficulties for Ukrainians in terms of everyday life, so you cannot really navigate normally across the city because you have to go to the shelter, and you know, infrastructure is not working properly because of that as well. So yeah, so Ukrainians just, you know, expect another attack, but again, we will see if this is going to happen.
And we also understand that the head of the Ukrainian intelligence service has been talking about Crimea. Can you tell us what he said?
Yes, Mr. Budanov, he quite often he's talking about Crimea, and he always highlights that Crimea is definitely a priority for Ukraine as a territory for liberation. It's a part of Ukraine. And just recently he said in his interview that actually Ukraine should consider and should be very serious about having Crimea back, having Ukraine liberated until summer. So, of course, we don't have any confirmation of anything that, like any operations that Ukraine is preparing. It's under the secret. For the moment, I can just state that the head of Ukrainian intelligence once again highlighted the importance of Crimea for Ukraine, because, of course, Crimea is a huge military base of Russia. And it would never be safe for Ukraine if Russian forces are located in Crimea.
Anna, changing gears a bit, the NGO Human Rights Watch released a report today accusing Ukrainian forces of using a banned anti-personnel mine when fighting Russian forces in the east. Has there been any official reaction?
Yes, actually, just in, we have a reaction from Ukrainian ombudsman. And basically what he said, first of all, what he mentioned that he has quite a lot of questions to this report. And he highlighted that that the organization once again used a map of Ukraine without including Crimea. And this is definitely, creates a very negative reaction from the Ukrainian officials and from Ukraine in general. What he also said, and I would quote him, that Ukraine has real evidence that Russia is making every effort to discredit Ukraine, first of all, with the aim of weakening its military support. Therefore, we call on all partners to take this factor into account before drawing conclusions about any accusations against Ukraine. Also, he mentioned that obviously, this kind of things is a great threat for the civilians. And he reminded that Ukraine is in war with Russian forces since 2014. And also the territory where these mines were found was under occupation by Russian forces for quite a long time.
I'm sure it's not the last we'll hear of this. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. As the war grinds on in Ukraine, we're learning more about the involvement of other friends and allies of Kyiv. While tanks from the U.S. and Germany have gotten the lion's share of media attention recently, Bulgaria quietly supported Ukraine with ammunition and diesel fuel as early as last April. Kirill Petkov was prime minister of Bulgaria last February when the invasion happened. He was the leader of a fragile coalition government, and helping Kyiv was anything but certain.
So we were in a very delicate situation because for the first time in Bulgaria we had a four-party coalition. Mm-hmm. A four-party coalition means unprecedented coordination among parties with different ideologies. On one side we had the most right democratic party that is like really... If it was up to them, they would send everything immediately, let me say it this way. A very anti-Russian in their history, because many of those people, their parents were actually victims of the 1944 events. So they're very for immediate support. On the other side, in this coalition, we had the former Communist Party, who have strong ties to Russia, and who really wanted to make sure that we are not leading in this because we are too close to the war and it's too scary for Bulgaria. And they said not a single bullet has to go to Ukraine. So we had on one side saying we have to immediately help. On the other side, we had a party that said not a single bullet have to be sent to Ukraine, or otherwise we'll come out of the coalition and the government will be dropped.
So Petkov and his team developed a plan to sell Bulgarian ammunition and supplies to third-party countries who could in turn donate it to Ukraine.
And I'm very fortunate and I'm thankful that other NATO and EU countries decided that we have these ammunitions, and of course with our understanding of the situation, and they would buy directly from Bulgaria and give it as a as a present to the Ukrainian army, in other words, without charging Ukraine direct funds, which was the best of all worlds in a way, because on one way we can make a big contribution to helping the Ukrainian army. On the other side, the Ukrainian nation was not paying for it as much or at all. And the third party was that there was no direct exports from Bulgaria to Ukraine, which satisfied our coalition partner.
Perhaps most interesting, Petkov and the Bulgarian government didn't tell anyone they were doing this.
One can brag about stuff. But if you brag about stuff in a moment that's not for bragging, you can actually eliminate the support of the people that need it. So here it was about political discipline and PR. Every politician wants to say what they do on the very second they do it. On the other side, what's the real purpose here is to really help the people that really are in need. And that was the power of partnership, the power of NATO.
That's Kirill Petkov, former Prime Minister of Bulgaria. You can read more on the VOA Ukrainian Services website. The children still in Ukraine are being forced to deal with the trauma of war. To help them process their emotions, Ukrainian psychologists are using a method called toy therapy. Anna Kostachenko reports.
9-year-old Irina is playing calmly with her cousins at home in the village of Krasilivka outside Kyiv. But just a few months ago, she shuddered at the slightest noise, says her mother Natalia Ladan. In March, early in the war, the family lived under near constant Russian shelling.
We were in the cellar. There was a loud explosion. The children started screaming and crying inconsolably. The lights went out. It was terrifying.
When a Russian rocket badly damaged the roof of the house, Ladan left for Western Ukraine with her two daughters, sister and two nieces. They returned in April after the Russians retreated. But Ladan noticed her daughters were still under a lot of stress. The family decided to visit a special toy therapy room set up by Ukrainian psychologists to help children deal with their trauma.
The toy therapy room project is a special space where a child and even an adult can receive healing and have the opportunity to relieve tension, receive psychological therapy.
When Irina visited the room, she picked a zebra out of the many toys available. Psychologists say she transferred all her fears to the toy and became terrified of the toy itself.
When I went to bed with her, I had a terrible dream. I asked my grandmother to take her somewhere so that I would not see it. I felt much better.
Say goodbye.
Local psychologist Vita Moskalenko says the girl transferred her fears to the toy. Now she can choose a new toy friend.
What would you like? See what we have.
After some hesitation, Irina chose a snake as a symbol of her own strength.
Is this the right one?
It's for me.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
The first toy therapy room opened in June. Now there are about 100 such rooms throughout Ukraine that have helped more than 1,600 Ukrainian children. There are plans to open similar rooms for Ukrainian refugee children outside the country, as many are forced to remain abroad as the Russians continue to target critical infrastructure. Anna Kostichenko for VOA News, Kyiv Region, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.